Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Conservation Stories. This is your host, Hillary Timmons Sims, and Conservation Stories is a podcast that's brought to you by the Sandhill Area Research Association. And we are based right here in the heart of cotton country. And we have someone who has been in the cotton industry for a while, and especially on like certification kind of ideas of like what are ways that we can market, what are different customers looking for, and what are brands looking for. And I have asked Darren Abney to join us. So you are, Darren is, he's a local boy. He's a Lubbock boy, right?
I am. Hi.
So Darren, did you grow up in Lubbock?
I say I grew up in Lubbock because I moved here when I was in elementary school.
So there you go.
Grew up in Midland, Odessa area. Came back up here to Tech. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you graduated from Tech and you just stayed around and you kind of fell into this role.
I got sucked into the industry.
Right.
And I've been doing it now for 17 years, which I love.
Yeah.
But I have lived in Lubbock and I've traveled the world. I've been very fortunate in this industry to get to see a lot of diverse use of cotton, I'll say.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think most of the people that listen to us, if they've listened to any of the podcasts for very long, they'll know that we're right smack dab in the middle of 5 million acres, 3 million of that every year is cotton. We five counties around us produce 70-something percent of all U.S. cotton. Cotton grading standards were set here. Cotton harvesting equipment happened on the Vardaman farm.
Mm.
You know, so that there we just have such a long history. And cotton is really what turned the economy around in this region for us. And so it's near and dear to everyone's heart. And it's actually so good for the environment. And so people need to be wearing more cotton. I know that one of the things that happened in our region, like good 30 plus years ago, was the pioneering of the organic cotton market. And we had good friends. I'm sure you know the Bingham family.
Oh, yes.
And I thought they were crazy. And I was like, it's a fad. It's going to go away. And it really has not gone away.
Yeah.
And people still like their organic food. And people still want, now that I understand, I used to be like, why does anyone want organic clothes? You're just wearing it. Doesn't make any difference. Now I'm understanding, oh my goodness, like things that we put on our skin can disrupt like our hormones. I'm like, this is the deal. Like, I don't know. Like, there can be things in that they put on in the clothes that, and it's not to me, like by the time cotton leaves my field, like the fiber leaves my field, is it contaminated from my field? Personally, I doubt it. That would be a no. But that's my, you know, opinion.
Well,
but you know.
The supply chain too, though, is so dense. That's what
it's the supply chain. Yeah.
And your fiber is going to change, 12 to 15 hands before it ends up in a product going home with the consumer.
Okay. So that is something that we've never, ever covered really on this podcast is, okay, so we're growing cotton here and it goes to the gin, it's processed, it's put in a bale and it's stored here. And then there's a big co-op, so there's still the organic co-op, but there's also this big, huge cotton cooperative that's the largest in the globe. And so all these farmers work together, they market their cotton, and it's classed. Every single bale is looked at, like for the length and the color, all of these different standards. And then every single barrel is classified, so when somebody needs a certain specific product that they're making that needs a certain quality of cotton, they can go and order that specific quality.
Right.
Okay. Now we have come to the end of all that my knowledge can share. Because after it leaves the warehouse, I've never seen any of that.
Okay. Well, so I mean, to tee up my experience in this area, I'm the executive director of the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol. And that is the voluntary sustainability program for U.S. cotton growers.
Okay.
And when I started in this industry back in 2008, it was really to help and work with retailers and brands who were looking for organic certified mm-hmm. cotton or recycled polyester or whatever sustainable material it may be.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I worked with Textile Exchange for a number of years.
Okay.
And then I went over to another organization and another. And now, because of that experience working in the supply chain, I am at the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol. And we have this whole traceability system to link the brand all the way back down to the bales that you're talking about.
Okay.
And so the average steps, 12 to 15 from the field to an end product, that's a lot. Because you have to think about, the qualities that you're referring to. Those bales are going to different spinners all over the world that are creating a yarn that goes into a fabric, that goes into a product, that goes through dyeing and finishing, that goes through cut and sew. So cottons all around the world are blended to meet the specs for different types of products. My jeans versus a men's dress shirt are going to use completely different types of fibers.
Okay.
Because there's different in application, you have a different hand feel, price, quality, all those things matter.
Right. So the cotton classing office that's here in Lubbock, I've been to and through that a couple of times. Super interesting. We like literally have machines that look at the cotton. So what all are they looking at? I mean,
they're looking at
length and micronair.
Yes. Strength, color, all of the details behind what makes that quality fiber, that quality of fiber, I think is what has given the U.S. such a reputation in the global market when they introduced mechanized grading back in the mid-1980s.
Mm-hmm. Which happened in Lubbock, by the way.
Yes.
It was created, I believe, in someone's garage in Lubbock, Texas.
Really?
This is what I have been told by the people that know.
I didn't know before I had this job, but now working for, at the Protocol, we're a division of the National Cotton Council. And the NCC team was telling me at the drama and disruption of it becoming a mechanized process because grading had been done by hand for so many generations. Mm. Right?
Right.
So now it gives you the bale of cotton that you want and you order. If you're an Indian supplier or you're in China or Vietnam or wherever you're manufacturing, when you purchase a bale of U.S. cotton to meet a certain quality specification, you're going to get that specification.
Yes. And it's traceable.
Yes.
It's a very sophisticated industry. And I think that personally, our region is responsible for that happening.
Okay. I don't know the history of the region, but I'll help you
with that later. I'll give you some books.
That unique bale identification system, though, that you're talking about, that's why the U.S. industry has always said that it's a traceable cotton. But the challenge has been for the brands and retailers who are using that cotton to be able to track that through the garment, the fabric, the yarn, all of that information is what we've done with the Trust Protocol now. And putting that together with a partner, Textile Genesis, we're seeing scale now. Just in the last 3 months, I would say brands that we work with, they're really utilizing that traceability function because they want to be able to verify the content of their product.
Yeah. And we spoke with Liz Hirschfield, which that podcast will probably come on maybe the week before this, but about traceability. And one of the things that she said, like when she came to visit, she said, what I didn't understand until I came here was that you all were already doing these things. Mm. We just have to verify, so that these corporations that are buying it don't get in trouble, because they're following different kind of laws, different nations.
Yeah.
And so they're held accountable. They can't just go out and say something just because a farmer tells them.
Yes.
That has to be verified. And like our frustration of like, why do we have to spend so much money verifying, and how can we, like I had one lady tell me, she's like, oh my, I'm spending, more than half of the money that I get in my, it's not subsidy. I'm sorry. I've lost the noun that I'm looking for, but they're giving people like a premium.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So her premium that she gets paid, she's like, I spend like 3/4 of it on my certification.
Yeah. Having that independent third party verification certification come and do the inspection and say, yes, it's the concept of not checking your own homework, right? You need someone to come.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. It is a challenge. And I will say that the way the industry has evolved just in the last 15 years, I'd say brands and retailers who were saying that you know, to their consumer, we are quote unquote more sustainable. And I think that term sustainable has been overused quite a bit in the last decade.
Yes. Yeah.
And there's a lot of confusing definitions of that.
It is. And to that point, I will tell you that, and we say this, I say this very frequently on this podcast. So we have a friend that said, who the hell knows what sustainability means?
Yeah.
But stewardship is a verb and makes you responsible. But I thought, what does it mean? And it's actually comes from an economic theory called the triple bottom line, mm-hmm. where you are conscious of people, planet, and profits. Mm-hmm. And so when I learned that, I had less hatred for the word. Yes. And so that is like kind of the foundation of what we look at. And we're like, you know, feelings about things are going to come and go. But what we always know is like we care about the environment and we love and care for our neighbors. And if we can't make a profit, we can't have a good impact on either one of those.
Yeah.
And so we have to keep those three things in balance, which is one reason why we, you know, we work with the fossil fuel industry. You know, we believe that that there's those companies, sure, maybe some of them could do better. And by leaving the dialogue, we don't help them do better. And how can we partner with them in agriculture to do better? You know, but we also know that energy is one of the first steps out of poverty. And we saw what happened when we didn't have energy during Harvey in Texas. People died, you know, and so we know that also we're going to need about 60 times the amount of energy we have right now. So we're going to need energy from every source possible. So all that long-winded speech to tell you, we try to keep a balanced perspective.
Yeah,
on these things.
I've always said that sustainability is businesses' ability to meet their needs today without compromising their ability to continue business in the future.
That's a great way to put that. Yeah,
and you can think about that with your family, with your business, with your home. You're not gonna. Right. I think brands today are really looking at raw materials, cotton included, as instrumental piece of their business that they have to address today in order for it to remain intact 20, 50 years from now. Because brands sell product. And if you don't have materials, you don't have product.
Right.
So I would say 20, 50 years ago, brands were not thinking that way. It was about finding the cheapest material at the cheapest cost to get it out there in the market and make as much as possible, depending on your business model. Mm-hmm. There's different models where you have high quality product that might last longer. But you know, the spread of, I would say, buy-in for sustainability is more prevalent today and is not going away. Even though legislation and things are changing really rapidly right now, retailers and brands, I think, are still very committed to sustainability.
Well, a lot of these are international companies. And so the ebb and flow, we have an unusual ebb and flow in the United States, right? You know, Canada's kind of similar, but like the things that are happening across the globe, those are continuing in a certain direction, you know what I mean? More towards, you know, policy and more towards, you know, not having a lot of choices about what you do. But we still have that freedom here. Where cotton is a global commodity, like it leaves us. That's why I don't know, because I've never followed it across the ocean when it leaves Texas. But it all leaves us. We don't have our mills here anymore. And
And I don't think that's coming back. Way that it used to be.
Yeah.
Just economies of scale, investments that have been made in other places of the world. Brands and retailers are going to continue to diversify. After COVID and the pandemic, we saw that they really started to look more at nearshoring in Central and South America.
Right.
But still, you cannot operate business the way they are today without those international supply chains. So as one of the largest consumer markets in the U.S., of course that product's coming back to us.
Because it leaves, we do lose a lot of that economic value because it leaves. And that's something that it's been gone for a while. And I agree, like bringing that back and then the kind of jobs that would need, you know, those jobs that would need to be filled. I'm not sure that we have the labor force for that as well. So, yeah, I think you're right. I do think some of it has come closer to home, though, right? It's probably a lot of it's in Mexico, too. So, today's episode is brought to you by Evan Stone with Clear Rock Farm and Ranch, part of the Clear Rock Realty Group in Lubbock, Texas. Evan understands West Texas land, agriculture, and what it takes to buy and sell farms and ranches in our unique region. If you're ready to make your next move, trust someone who knows the lay of the land. Visit Evan at clearrockrealty.com, serving Lubbock and the surrounding communities. Clear Rock Farms and Ranch, your partner on the plains. What is it in your mind that makes cotton such a valuable fiber?
Well, cotton is the most widely used natural fiber, and more studies are showing the impact of microplastics in our environment, in our bodies, in everything we eat and touch. And as a natural fiber that naturally biodegrades, I think it plays a really important role for textiles. But there's also the comfort aspect of it, right? Like, I like a cotton t-shirt. I want to have cotton to sleep in. And I think as a natural fiber, the thing that makes it also so attractive and just, you know, an important part of this world is the fact that cotton is grown on family farms. So the social aspect of that, you have that real connection to people who are working the land, stewarding the land, looking at soil health, all of those things that really, without sounding too much like a hippie or a tree hugger here, yeah. I think it's an important aspect of the world that, you know, growers mm-hmm. are the foundation of society. And if we don't have that, then mm-hmm. we've got a problem.
Right. Exactly. It's about security, national security. And for us, it's the security of our economic region, you know, and I think we're going to see in some diversification, you know, of production methods and crops.
Sure.
As we run out of water, you know, but I think that there's also, if you listen to our podcast, you will be encouraged about some of the solutions that we talked about in the past. So, but I, back to like this certification ideas. So we visited some with Liz about like, what is it? Like, what do they want to know? And we never really got down to that. Like, what is it? What do they want to know? Do they want to know like how many times I sprayed pesticides? Do they want to know like, how much water I used? What do they want to know?
They meaning the brands.
Yeah. So let's say someone's going to come to my farm and audit my farm.
Sure.
And to make sure that whatever the brands are wanting, they're confirming that I'm providing them the cotton that meets whatever standard that they have set.
Right.
In growing.
So I would say that there is such a wide range of certifications in the market today. It's overwhelming, sometimes confusing, but there are certifications for everything out there. Forestry, marine stewardship, cotton is one of them. And there's a variety of different certifications within cotton.
Exactly.
I think there's also this reputation that the word certification has in the U.S. cotton community, which links back to the organic certification.
Right? No, absolutely. That's exactly what I think of as the organic certification, which is... And that I got a little confused visiting with Liz about this, and we didn't really have time to follow up, but it's USDA certified organic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so why do we not have the USDA certifying these other things?
Right. I would say, well, there's a lot of reasons behind that, but as a standard owner, you have a certain set of criteria that has been following certain credibility principles, and say you're building those principles based on consultation with a lot of people who are involved in that process. And the stringent criteria inside of organic is very clear in the minds of consumers, and people are using it, saying no chemical use, no synthetic fertilizer use, et cetera, et cetera. Well, there's also a lot of holes that get poked in that certification from others in the industry who say, well, what about water use? What is it doing about social criteria? What's it doing about X, Y, and Z? From a brand's perspective, I think that they're really looking at certifications almost, I hate to say this, but like an insurance policy to say, hey, we invest in more sustainable materials, mm-hmm. and here's all the certifications that we're going to accept. Mm-hmm. Some of them are in, some of them are out. And if you want to be on our list of preferred fibers, then you've got to be in one of these programs. And so all the brands who are members of the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol are obviously accepting protocol cotton in that system. They also typically will accept organic. Sometimes they'll accept recycled cotton. Sometimes they'll accept things like the OE100, or they'll accept, the Better Cotton Initiative.
I was going to say, what about like BCI? So,
yep.
So you have, this is my perspective, and tell me if I'm correct, but certifying bodies say, oh, here's a way to make money.
Mm.
And so let's go in here and be the ones that figure out how to make money, because like brands need this. So farmers can't give it to them. So let's figure out how to do that. That's why I think like Cotton Trust Protocol is unique, because it's actually part of the industry. Mm-hmm. Right. So what makes these certifications? Why are there so many? Like, why are there so many? Like, why do we have like five different ways to certify cotton? Are they different standards? Are they all the same standard?
There's different standards for sure. There's different criteria.
Okay.
There's like one that has emerged is Regen Agri, because people are really interested in regenerative agriculture. There's some challenges, I think, with identifying criteria between the different standards for growers, for brands. But in general, you have to decide what is a credible program and standard. And then you have to, and the way that we do that is defining the ICL code compliance. So that's ICL best practice principles that mean you are credible because you're following all of these principles. And there's a lot of those to dive into. So we, as the protocol, are the standard owner, so to speak. To be clear, it's not a standard. We're a verification program because we don't follow the same requirements as a certification inside the supply chain. We have a different approach. I'm going to confuse you. I see your face.
Okay.
Let me back up and say, okay, you have the standard owner, but then you have the certification body. So again, I can't go and check my own homework to say, yep, you're following my rules.
Okay. So the standard owner mm-hmm. would be like the brand?
No, it would be whoever is responsible for the principle, the production principles and criteria that are inside.
So Cotton Trust Protocol.
Cotton Trust Protocol. We own the standard. We are responsible for the grower questionnaire.
Okay.
Better Cotton Initiative is responsible for their grower questionnaire. Organic, it has its own certification, like the GOTS, Global Organic Textile Standard. That's a certification body. But then you have lots of organizations who say, okay, I am allowed to be a verifier or certifier against all of these different standards.
So they're the auditors. They're coming in like control union.
Exactly. Control union, IDFL. We work with a lot of different Averam. We work with a lot.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So there's a whole lot of those people. And that's who I see as the one that's taking all the money.
Well, they do get paid for those audits. Yeah.
They get paid very well for those audits.
I don't have a comment on an exact price, but I will say that, yeah, that the part of that is, I think what's evolving also is this whole certification movement. I think there's a lot of fatigue in the industry.
Yeah.
There's a lot of frustration in the industry. And as technology advances, we're able to access raw data in ways that we never have before.
I.e. NASA.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I'm saying. Is there a way for us to verify this, legit verify, without it being as burdensome? Like, hey, I can just pull this data, you know, like it's there, you know. I don't know. I'm like, this is something I discussed with Liz too. Like, what's the potential for this?
I think it's the thing I'm most excited about with the protocol is that we're looking at what we're calling precision assurance. That's
there you go.
Okay. Deeper and using information that is publicly available and looking at unique things like satellite imagery to say, okay, there was crop rotation on this field. You don't have to send someone, pay someone a couple $1,000s to come and do the inspection. If that's what the price is, I don't actually know. I shouldn't quote that.
Yes. No, but, it's more than that. So there you go. Mm-hmm.
But precision assurance, because of the evolution of technology, I mean, growers who are out there in the field every day, they're collecting data just by the tractors pass over the land, right?
Right.
So how do we utilize that to the benefit of the grower to also reduce the paperwork? Because no grower likes that. Nobody likes that.
No, and you spend all day with somebody that may or may not know what they're doing. It may ask questions that you're like, why are you the certified?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So who are you again?
Who are you and why are you here? Yeah. Yeah. I think also you remove that, you know, I personally, I mean, like I can, I remember we did try to, like, the last 2 years we farmed, convert our land to organics. And I remember when they would come. And it was nerve-wracking, you know what I mean? And, like, you didn't want somebody who had an agenda.
Right.
Right? You know? And so, like, I know that that's got to be, you know, in the back of people's minds that, like, who are you going to – what if Control Union sends me somebody that has an agenda, you know?
Yeah. And we work really hard with our groups to try and help them be relaxed and understand that it's because that's what the expectation is from the market. We still have to send those verifiers out to check
the
information and look at the field.
Well, but I'm excited to see what emerges with this new idea of, you know, letting the, like, verifying that data on farm. There's ways to do it.
Yeah. And I don't think it's going away based even regardless of recent politics and all the things.
No, I think that, you know, I think our generation was probably the last generation that wasn't trained to think about things like that. You know, like I didn't grow up. I would say that I was an anti-environmentalist. You know, I'm in the Rush Limbaugh era. I'm like, environmentalist wackos are the enemy, you know,
right.
Which is, like, hilarious that I'm even have conversations about this.
Yeah.
Conservation is just bizarre to me. It's not a place where I thought I would end up. But, you know, I see opportunity. That's what I see, you know. And so I also go, I totally misunderstood. I was too blind, you know, and I see people that took advantage of the opportunity that organics brought them. They were able to diversify their, you know, portfolio on their farm.
That is exactly what the U.S. Contrast Protocol was built for, is to set the table so that you can come and tell your story. We're not trying to beat you over the head and give you prescriptive farming practices.
Right.
But how do you utilize the tools and resources to be able to showcase that to the world that you are doing things more sustainably?
Right. Well, and we had this discussion earlier today. We've recorded 5 podcasts today. So earlier today, which is like 3 weeks ago for people listening, we discussed that whole idea of how we in agriculture, we don't understand our market. We don't understand consumers. Liz brought up the point that, like, literally a lot of consumers do not know that there is a label in their clothes that tells them what their clothes are made out of, you know? And that just blows my mind. You know, that is something I would never have ever thought. But we stay in our little communities, you know, you are afraid, like, to stick your head out there because you're like, was somebody going to, like, come after me because they think I'm doing X, Y, or Z, you know? But when we don't do that, we're not understanding the market, and we really do have a customer.
Yeah.
And more we have to figure out who they are and what they want and how do we reach them. And then if we work towards advocating for agriculture, how do we stop preaching to the choir? You know, and, like, is there a way for us to, like, let's don't talk about things that are touchy subjects. Let's talk about the realities of, you know, what it's like. I love my animals.
Right.
And Lacey calls her, you know, her herd is the girls.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows every single one of them. You know, she, like, understands and remembers every calf that they've ever had. And, you know, like, that's the kind of story. But, like, the rancher down the road knows that same thing. And if we bring in conversations that isolate, because we don't know our clients, we don't know our customers, you know, we don't know our market, they quit listening, and then we're just preaching to the guy down the road.
It's interesting because it makes me think at the opposite end of the supply chain, retailers and brands, it used to be the same thing that they were so worried about, you know, if I was doing something sustainable, it was an organic cotton t-shirt line in the store, and that's it. And then there was this trepidation that came in, like, 2010, 20, 12 period where, oh man, what about the other 95% of product I have in the store? Is the customer going to call me out? Am I going to be bad for that? And there was this big shift in just looking at all materials. And recently, in the last few years, there's been this recoiling of talking about their materials or any kind of sustainability for fear of getting in trouble.
Right.
And I think brands who are succeeding right now financially are getting out there and talking about it. They're showing their customers, this is the source, this is what we're doing, what we're working on. We're not perfect, but we're working on it.
Right. And that's one of the things, Liz, that is all, you know, being authentic about the way you talk about these things, you know, and the folks that are still out there doing that are trying to do it in an authentic way, yeah. Which I think that really does, that resonates with people. You know, I think we've gained a lot, you know, through the use of our cell phones, and we know about all kinds of things, but we've lost a lot of the relationship, you know, ability. You know, it's just like Liz saying, when I came, it changed everything. You know, we've got to do more of that.
And what you just said about being authentic, I think that goes back to one of the earlier questions you asked. What do I love about cotton? I love that if you sit down with a cotton grower, you're going to have an authentic conversation. And it's true. And it's what draws people in, which is why I think anytime we bring these guys from retailers and brands who work in their office in New York or San Francisco, right, and have never been to a cotton, right, field, and they get to see it and touch it and feel it, it's a forever education. They're going to carry that with them the rest of their career.
It would be so fun, like, to me to like really do like honing in on Lubbock, the consumers in Lubbock.
Oh yeah.
They have a vested interest in the cotton industry. They don't know it, but so much of their economy, you know. And so we've talked about like we definitely need to have, you know, field days for consumers here, you know, and introduce them to agriculture. But it'd be really cool. And I've seen some cotton, one of the cotton, there are many facets of the cotton industry. Uh-huh. And one of them has been doing an awareness campaign, you know, like someone's been going around Lubbock even and saying, hey, at this Walmart, here's BCI tags and, you know, here's this cotton and here's this cotton and here's this cotton, yeah, you know? And so, but it would be really interesting to see like how can we educate Lubbock consumers? We do a specific targeted campaign,
yeah,
towards Lubbock consumers. Would the use of cotton, or would it go up? Cotton apparel?
I mean, the challenge today is really the availability of cotton. It's because it's not as cheap as polyester, the synthetic oil fiber. You know, it's just, it's everywhere. So it's, yes, difficult to go, right, into a store and find cotton, which is so important. And we used to have the ag game, right? As well, it used to be the cotton game at Tech, but now it's the ag game.
Oh, yes. Yes, I remember. Yeah, right.
It's controversial, but I remember going to the last time it was the cotton game. There was a giant bale of cotton, you know, put out as you're entering the stadium. And that was always a big community awareness moment. Yeah.
Well, that might be a fun thing to do, is just kind of like, we might could do like a social trend, like, hey, when you are in this store, let's see, let's figure out where's cotton. Can you, it's kind of like, you know, how people had rocks everywhere, find these weird rocks everywhere. Like, hey,
I won't name the company, but there was a local company recently I went to. I was looking for a new dress shirt, and every single shirt was synthetic. And I was asking the owner about it, and she said, yeah, it's real sad because my grandfather was a cotton grower. And I'm like, what? You have no – she's like, I can't find it. I cannot find the quality cotton that I need for my store, which is disappointing, right? So more of that. I see there's more of a concerted effort, especially as consumers become more aware of – what natural fibers mean and how important they are to the environment.
Yeah. Yeah. And people care, you know, and there's people even like currently where we are, they care, you know, I think that there's folks that care, and we really are, it's important. And I think that it's going to continue to be, you know, but we can't lose sight of the profitability side for the farmer and for the brands and retailers along the way.
I completely admire and respect growers, because that is not an easy job.
It's not.
And
I did look up a while ago, cotton's at 66 cents.
No,
almost
comment.
67. It's just, people don't know. Like, it's that is what it was like Oh my gosh, years, decades ago, decades ago. But like the input costs are up like 100% from decades ago.
I know of a few growers that are going out of business this year. It's not good.
I'm not surprised. My husband and I went through bankruptcy in 2011, and we just re-recorded a podcast to discuss that because, you know, we need it. I hope people will listen to that, you know, if they're going through bankruptcy or trying to make decisions, you know, because we really wanted to remove some of the shame of that, you know, by talking about it. And remember, and like help people understand, like, hey, here we are, you know, a decade beyond that. And hey, there's life after that. And you can be happy. And even if you never wanted to do anything but farm, you just never know what's next, you know?
Well, I know we're almost at time, but I'll just say on a positive note, I do feel extremely lucky and blessed to be able to work in and around this industry for so long because there's so many great people that really do care, like you said.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, it's not that deep caring and empathy is not going to change.
Right. I think that is exactly right. And we excited about, I think, the potential for helping on our side, helping agricultural connect to different industries that can provide value, you know. And Lacey and I've been going to produced water events. Now, Lacey, she's got two speaking engagements in the next couple of months in that industry, you know. So there is... It is time to get out of our silos and start working together and collaborating, especially, you know, here we're, these pump jets are on our fields, you know, it's a perfect collaboration. And I remember about 4 years ago going to an event, an energy event, and saying, you know, the way you feel about how people respond to you and your industry is how we feel. We feel like we get attacked as well, you know, although I do think some of that in the ag industry is coming back around as people after COVID have started to understand, like, we really need farmers.
Sure.
You know, and they are actually the answer to some of the problems that we see that we have. So that's kind of interesting to me. But
it's genuinely the backbone of civilization. And we have got to, it's a daily struggle for me to educate my kids on just some of those basics.
Oh, it's true. It is. It's important for society and particularly for us. So thanks for coming.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It was great to catch up today.
Yeah. It was really great. Darren, I appreciate you giving us your time and lending your expertise so that I could grow my knowledge and the listeners get to do that as well. So, well, friends, thanks for joining us again for this episode of Conservation Stories. If you have found it to be helpful and enjoyed any of the episodes you've listened to, would you please like and share that? It's super helpful to us. And we look forward to another episode coming at you next week. Conservation Stories.